Where do you want to start?
I think I just want to shout out to those heartfelt condolences to those who are losing family, friends, businesses in Jamaica and Cuba and elsewhere in the Atlantic Basin, because Hurricane Melissa made landfall yesterday afternoon with sustained winds that are astonishing, 185 miles per hour. That's sustained. That's aren't bursts. And that's higher than even Katrina when it made landfall.
They're saying the second strongest ever to hit that region.
And this is a Category 5. Storm surges up to 13 feet and I think even higher in Cuba today. So it's difficult to kind of comprehend the size of that storm and what it means for livelihoods. But our hearts are going out to those in the Atlantic Basin. And, of course, Washington, D.C. continues to feel like a hurricane to most of us Americans.
It does. And on that, I'd kind of like to start with a shutdown, if that's okay.
I agree. I think that's a big part of our hurricane right now.
And the last time Nancy and I were on together was right before the shutdown.
Yes.
And we talked about this then and kind of had a little disagreement or difference of opinion. I thought the Democrats were making a mistake. And I don't know what to think now. I really don't. We are so – I'll just say
sure.
my part. We are so far into this, and it is so different than any other shutdown we've ever had. I thought that the Democrats would get the blame for it. And the reason I thought that is because I'm too much inside baseball. It's like Republicans passed a clean CR, so of course the Democrats will get the blame. The public doesn't know or care about a clean CR. They know that. I think they understand that the Democrats are kind of the ones wanting to get something done, but they also intrinsically know that the Republicans control everything.
Yes.
And the thing you hear over and over and over again, not in just this one, but anytime there's a stalemate like this, people say, well, just get the leaders and lock them together in a room and don't let them out till they come to a decision. Well, if you do that, that means you have to negotiate. And Mike Johnson's position has been to shut down the House.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even there.
They're not there. They've been shut down the whole time.
And these members of Congress are being paid.
Right, right. So on that end of it, I was wrong, I think, in terms of public sentiment. But beyond that, but what I'm torn by is I don't know if that matters.
Yeah.
Because in a couple of days, people are going to lose food assistance.
Yes.
And so at that point, who gets the political blame or not?
Is really not the ish point.
It really isn't. And ultimately, I just don't see Democrats holding out because Republicans will let that happen more easily.
Yes.
And I'm not saying they want it or I'm not saying they're cruel, but I'm just saying they have more tolerance for that than Democrats do.
Well, and I think you might be right there. And you knew my position from last time, right before
that,
is that this was health care subsidies were a line in the sand for Democrats, and they had been stiffed before by Republicans when they thought they had negotiated in good faith, and then the Republicans backed off. So I think now, they had no choice but to really refuse this bill. But now I can't. You see people suffering,
yeah,
and it's
exactly.
just heartbreaking.
Yeah, and like I said, it is so different. The president to leave the country.
Twice.
And to be fixated on a luxury ballroom.
Yes.
Is just so
And eventually
different.
A triumphal arch.
Right. And he, so every day he is sending the message that I don't care.
Yeah, exactly.
This is your problem. I didn't cause it. This isn't my problem.
That's right. And every previous president has tried his best to resolve and end a shutdown.
Right.
Every previous president.
Right, including Donald Trump.
Including Donald Trump last time.
Yeah.
And in fact, Donald Trump last time didn't do these things like talking about firing people while they're furloughed. And he's been stopped temporarily from that. But this is the kind of stuff that is just really unique to him. Right now in this point of time. I did see this as something interesting. The Washington Post has been interviewing a lot of the furloughed workers and seeing how they're doing. And they've been looking at stress. And one of the things they found is that some of these federal workers are saying it's actually less stressful being furloughed because they don't have to go every day into Washington, D.C. and work and expect to be fired every minute. So working for this administration this past year, or almost year, has been really highly stressful for many of these professional employees.
Oh, of course it has.
So anyway, well, what's curious also with Donald Trump is he is using funding maneuvers to bankroll the programs he likes, like the military. As he said last week, quote, we got the people we want to be paid.
He did for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But that won't last either.
Yeah, that's
true. And that is as illegal as can be.
Yes.
I mean, let's think about this.
Yes.
That we want our army being paid by one rich billionaire.
Yes, that's really, yeah, that makes it like a Praetorian Guard, but that's what he likes.
That's exactly what he likes. That's why that has to be struck down by the courts. The courts can't allow that.
No, I think that is absolutely right. Yeah, I was traveling out of the country last week, and I'm reading these headlines going, what the?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
it's going on.
Don't tell me you were surprised by any of it.
No.
I mean, just because you get a reprieve for a few days doesn't mean
right.
things are going to be
that's
different
right.
when you get back.
Just because I didn't have internet for a few days.
Right, right.
Yeah, that's right. That doesn't give me a blank slate. So I'd also like to just touch on those military strikes that are continuing against boats in the South, largely from Venezuela.
Right.
They've now killed at least 57 people. I think there was another strike on Monday of this week, killing 14. And this is also just really unprecedented. I'm getting so tired of that word. Mm-hmm. I should come up with something new. The administration says that they have the authority because they're targeting a national security threat, that this is a war against drug smuggling. They're equating it with terrorism, national self-defense. But undercutting that position, that argument, are a couple of things. First, the very first boat hit had already been backing off. They had not.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
they were not. Continuing. And among those on the others, there's at least two fishermen who have been killed, one from Colombia and another from Trinidad Tobago.
To be fair, though, I think a lot of the fishermen were tied up in the, I mean, that's how they made their money.
That could be how they survived economically. But it is.
That doesn't make it right.
That doesn't make it right. And in most cases, I mean, we're being told they're terrorists, but we're not really given.
Well, they're not terrorists. They're drug dealers.
And
this frustrates me.
Yeah.
People say, I heard somebody compare, say, more people have been killed by this than Al-Qaeda.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but the people who went to work on 9/11 did not contribute to their death.
Yes.
The people who take fentanyl cannot be compared to the innocent people going to work that day at the Twin Towers.
In fact, it's offensive, isn't it?
And the fact that we have a drug problem because we have wealthy consumers who are addicted to drugs. That's not any you can blame other countries for that if you want. But we are the ones. All we got to do is reduce the demand, and that problem goes away.
Yes, and we need to increase the public spending on rehab, on the sorts of things that
we
know work
do.
To get people off of these really deadly drugs, lethal in some
cases. And when it comes to fentanyl, I do get that. You do have to interdict that. You do have to stop that. I'm not saying you don't do those efforts.
Yes.
But you don't do them by blowing up boats.
And
this isn't about drugs. This is about regime change. Let's just be honest.
Yes, let's be clear.
Trump has a personal
vendetta
against Maduro.
Yep.
And so that's what this is about. Drugs are the excuse, just like everything is the excuse, because he needs an emergency so he can claim more powers to do things that he couldn't otherwise do.
And I agree with you 100% that you can really see this. And you can see it in how he's done. I mean, under the War Powers Act of 1973, he is supposed to notify Congress within 48 hours when American military are involved. He didn't notify him for weeks and weeks and weeks. And so there's, and of course, his Congress isn't acting anyway to stop him. But knowing that, he could have very easily abided by the War Powers Act. And of course, it's a violation of international law. But all of that makes him look like a hero. He's standing up to the world.
Well, to some people, it does. But to me, the bigger issue is, yes, you're absolutely right. Trump could go to this Congress and they would give him anything he asked for. But that's not the way he sees it.
He doesn't want to.
That would make him beholden.
Yep.
He doesn't want to have to ask anybody to do anything.
Yep. And that brings us to something that breaks my heart, the destruction of the East Wing.
Oh.
So rapidly. And again, not with just this peremptorily evidently it just shocked people even in the area that suddenly bulldozers showed up.
Well, then the story came out today, this morning, at least I heard it for the first time, that he fired everybody on the architecture committee.
Yes.
So,
Now, this is a commission that was set up almost a century ago to review the design specifications with the White House. There was another commission that he'd already gutted. Mm-hmm. Everybody on that commission, the Commission of Fine Arts, it's established by Congress more than a century ago to advise the President, Congress, and local government on design matters in the district. And this is a critical design matter. And then they were fully expecting to get it, the plans for this ballroom. And they were fired yesterday, all six of them. And, of course, they'll be replaced by those, quote, more aligned with America First policies. And that's already happened to the National Capital Planning Commission.
Of course. Every independent, quote, unquote, formerly independent agency or commission in the federal government is going to be gutted and replaced by loyalists.
And he's doing it, of course, by trying to do it with the Fed. So, anyway, I'm horrified because I see the White House is not a president's house. The president is a tenant. The White House is the people's house. It belongs to the people. Now, you can make changes. Every president has done something, but changing rugs, painting, or in 1942, expanding that the East Wing so it'll hide the bunker.
You're missing the big one. Obama's basketball court.
Oh. You're right.
Yep. I'm serious.
That's what they
when they
deciding.
Are asked about destruction of the East Wing, their response is, well, Obama put in a basketball court.
You're right. I had forgotten that. Yeah. I had forgotten that. So here we are. The other thing this is going to be is just a weird hunchback-looking building, this classical design that's on the back of our – every school child knows, known around the world, it's on the back of our $20 bill.
Right,
is now going to have – it's iconic. It's an image of America.
Hadn't thought about that. Going to have to remake the 20.
So we have a 55,000-square-foot White House to be dwarfed by a 90,000-square-foot ballroom.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Probably with a big T at the top. Anyway, let's go on.
So many, I think there was an argument to be made putting a ballroom next to the East Wing because doing things in tents does look a little bit,
And using outside venues isn't always most secure. So
that's right. That's right. And so there was a case to be made there. But like everything, Trump doesn't make a case.
Yeah.
He just doesn't.
And he does it in the most extreme way. 90,000 square feet, really?
Right.
Yeah. Bigger than the White House, almost double the size of the White House itself?
Almost double the size of the White House.
Yeah.
I know.
Yep.
I know. And so he just dares people, and they won't be able to stop. So what does the next Democratic president do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can't restore something. Anyway.
Well, you can't restore it.
Because then you'll just, you're right. You're
I
stuck
would be
with
tempted
this.
To knock it down. I would.
I would be, too. But it's early enough in this administration, it becomes a fait accompli, and then, I don't know.
No, it's going to get built. I have no doubt about
that. But maybe
that.
You can expand
Well, and the East Wing is already gone. So,
yes, that's right. So,
you know.
So I thought was a really good quote that I'd found from Betty Ford. She had said that the White House is the mind of the nation, but the East Wing is the heart. Because that's where soft power has been used historically, not only as the First Lady offices are there, but also that's where they had various meeting rooms and things were of soft power. And so this president doesn't believe in soft power. And of course, this First Lady isn't over there anymore. So I guess it's okay.
No, that's right. That's right. She's not.
Yeah. So that's my little.
My guess is the next president is going to have a wife or husband.
Husband. Yeah.
You know,
and I guess they'll have offices in the West Wing.
I guess,
or in the middle of the ballroom. We will see. So, what else would you like to chat about? Anything going on in the state?
Let's see. Well, locally, I don't know what there is. There is something going on in the state. But what I wrote my column on, we've got a few minutes here. It hasn't been talked about a lot, but Jeffrey Epstein's ranch in the Zorro Ranch. that he bought from Bruce King, former governor and attorney general. And it's outside of Santa Fe, close to the town of Stanley, by the Sandia Mountains, this big sprawling ranch. And I had forgotten all of this, but when he was finally arrested in New York.
Yes.
Hector Balderas, who was the attorney general at that time, said that it was a black eye for the state, the fact that he never faced charges here in New Mexico.
Yes.
There are at least, well, there are court filings from former victims.
Yes.
Who said that among the places they had been abused was the ranch in New Mexico. On top of that, at least one victim, Virginia Guffrey, the one who committed suicide later, alleged that she, at 16 years old, was sent to New Mexico to give Bill Richardson a massage.
Ah.
So that's kind of the what I'm asking in my column, is that why that Jeffrey Epstein was never charged in New Mexico? He bought the home from Bruce King, one of the most powerful men in the Republican Party. He had all kinds of dirt, apparently, on Bill Richardson.
Yes.
The most powerful man in the Democratic Party.
Yep, and he got a pass. Do you think that there might be some sort of an investigation now?
That's the point.
State Attorney General's office?
Well, it's actually a state legislator from Santa Fe. Andrea Romero is going to introduce a bill in this next session calling for what she's calling a truth commission.
Yes.
Which I think that's the point of my column was, yes, we should have done that a long time ago. Bill Richardson isn't here to defend himself. I'm not real comfortable talking about all of this, but, you know, the allegations are what they are and is awful. And, you know, we can't sweep them under the rug.
No, and I think this is really, I like the idea of a truth commission versus a prosecution.
Yeah.
I think that was real effective in the early days in South Africa.
Right.
Just to get things on record. That so that in 5-10 years time we can't say this never happened.
So people can speak without fear of prosecution.
Yes,
they can be honest about what they saw and what happened.
Yes, I think that avenue is a very wise one, and it will we can start to really understand what happened so that this never. I mean, we always say so this never happens again, but it can happen again if we don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's and. You know, once I saw her thing, I started digging into it. I was up there when Bill Richardson was governor.
Yes.
I was covering it every day. I didn't hear anything about this. I mean, it
was very effectively silenced.
Yeah, it
really
was.
Because there were powerful people. And who chose not to talk. And the people under them, those who facilitate, they're employees. They don't,
No, he was obviously a very intimidating man who had a lot of.
Yeah, that's what I've heard also. That was his. I was traveling internationally in '96. I was in Istanbul and he was coming, and I'd heard then that this guy's got some skeletons in his closet. Yeah, again, he's not here to defend himself, and I should not be casting aspersions on his character. But that's something that a truth commission could get to and find that, no, it was just a simple massage or something like that. There was nothing untoward.
That's right. Down to our last 5 minutes or so, we should mention election Tuesday.
That's right. Election. Show up to the polls.
That's right. If you have not yet voted, there are 3 city council seats up for election this year. 2 of them are going to be new members. Both, I always get my Beckys mixed up. Was it Becky Graham or Coran who didn't run this year? I think Coran, along with Yvonne Flores. Anyway, one of the Beckys gave up her seat. The other one is running for re-election.
Becky Coran is running for re-election.
Okay, so it would be Graham who gave up her seat. I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And there's also a bond, school bond.
Well, and four school board seats. But one is uncontested, if I remember right.
Okay.
I think that's right. Patrick Nolan in District 1, who is the vice president or chair, whatever it is, he's running uncontested.
Uh-huh.
But the other three, unlike the city council, the other three incumbents are all running to retain their seats. And They're kind of running in a package, sort of. I mean, when we were talking to them, each one took a little moment at the end to say, put a plug for the other ones and talk about how well they work together and how they're very hopeful that they all come back in you know, a package and they can continue what they've been doing.
Yeah.
So.
And I'd like to urge our listeners, if they don't know the issues or the candidates, to just spend some time to get acquainted with it. These local and state elections are critical, and we don't, especially local, we don't always show up. We have a very low voter turnout, and yet this is where policies and decisions are made that most affect us. So please show up to the polls, either today or on November.
Yeah, that's voting day,
November 4th.
Yeah, I voted a couple weeks ago and actually made the mistake of voting during a county commission meeting. And I read about all the new security procedures that they'd put in place, but I wasn't aware that they were meeting and didn't give it a thought. I get there, and all of a sudden, there's police at the door, and you got to go through a metal detector. And I just want to vote.
Yeah, this is intimidating.
Yeah, so, but anyway, that is, and I did want to say a quick thing about the bonds, because I wrote about that.
Oh, yes,
well.
Please do.
I typically vote for bonds. I think that we should reinvest in our community, especially schools. I mean, I've been to Mayfield. I know that that's an old school that needs to be refurbished. But beyond that, I just think that and the school bonds are a lot easier because they're revolving, which means that every time you approve a new bond, it replaces an expiring bond and your taxes don't go up. So for me, the school bond is easy. The county ones are a little bit more challenging because
can you explain those?
Yeah, they're both new bonds, and so if they both pass, the average taxpayer would pay about $15 a month more in taxes. One of them, the smaller one, is for the county fairgrounds. And my understanding is that that got broken out because there was some opposition to that, and so they thought instead of risking sinking the whole thing, we'll make that separate. And what it would do is there's a lot of old buildings there. As he said, we had somebody come in to talk about it. They don't have any lights in the parking lot. Those buildings were put in after World War II, I think, a lot of them. So they're just getting old. And beyond that, they had an old racetrack out there that isn't being used anymore. They want to convert that into an amphitheater. And so for me, all of that makes sense. That's the one I'm supporting because I like the fairgrounds.
Yes.
And I've always thought that we need something between the Pan Am Center and the Rio Grande Theater when it comes to concerts, something in between those two.
Yes.
So maybe this could be that. Anyway, that's the smaller one. The bigger one that I'm having a problem with is it would cover parks, trails, senior centers, recreation centers. I mean, just this whole big mix of things. And then they say, well, if it gets approved, we'll come back later and decide what our top priorities are going to be. And I just have a problem with that.
The vagueness bothers
you.
Yeah,
I want to invest in the county, but I want to know what I'm investing in.
Is it going to be helping with some of the shortfall? Are there federal funds that the county would normally apply for?
If so, they're not making that argument.
Okay.
And these are all capital improvement stuff.
Yeah.
It's not like replacing money for food stamps
which
or that
is the
kind
really
of thing,
critical stuff. Yeah,
which is going to be a huge issue for state and local governments here in the coming weeks. But anyway, I did want to just touch on the bonds because
I'm glad you did.
Yeah, most people don't pay any. Most of the time, I don't pay any attention to that. And it was actually a notice from the Chamber of Commerce that they had the same objection I did to that issue. So to the Greater Las Cruces Chamber of Commerce, thanks for bringing that to my attention.